welcome to the GCD Book Club conversation. We're glad to have you again this week, picking up Trevin Wax's book, This Is Our Time, Everyday Myths in Light of the Gospel. My name is Jeremy Ripel. I'm the Executive Director of Gospel Center Discipleship. Glad to be with you today. Along with me, as usual, I have my friend and co-host Grayson Pope, who is one of our associate editors. Grayson, how are you today?
I'm doing awesome, man. How are you?
Great. I'm doing very well, thank you. It's Friday. I'm excited. We're launching the podcast this Monday, so we're recording a little bit ahead of time. But I'm looking forward to this conversation in particular, and things are going well here in Michigan. And so this week, you and I are chatting about chapter one of the book, which the title of that is "Your Phone is a Myth Teller." I don't think Trevin means the rotary phone that's hanging on our wall that's connected to the landline. Do you?
Yeah, he's probably not talking about a flip phone.
No, definitely not one of those. You know, it was funny. I was thinking about this when I was reading this chapter. I actually lived in Northern California. It was a Macworld Expo in 2007 that Steve Jobs came out on the stage and unveiled the iPhone. That was like 10 years ago. I was there when he did that. And we went into the expo center, a buddy of mine, and began to walk around. It was like this iPhone was just floating on its own by itself in the case, spinning around, and like all the media and stuff was around it, shooting photos. And it was just the most surreal experience probably in my life to see that thing. And it was been something I'd been like, I want one of these. I need to have a phone like this because I can check my email, like all my music's on it, my calendar. It's going to take my productivity to the next step. And now 10 years later, I'm looking at it going, when can I get away from this thing?
Yeah, that's funny, man. That's crazy that you were there. That 2007, that year, you know, it was also the same year that Twitter was launched. Yeah. And maybe one other big social media platform, but it's now kind of, you know, like it was 1440 with the printing press. A lot of people are talking about 2007 being that same kind of cultural moment that year that everything changed.
Right. It was, you know, and it's all ubiquitous now. I mean, you can't go anywhere or do anything or see anybody without a smartphone. It's everywhere. Oh, yeah. We all have one. And I think Trevin is right in saying, you know, our phones are telling us a myth. They are really communicating to us something that isn't true. It's false. So kind of tell me a little bit of your perception, maybe just kind of a high level 30,000 foot view, overall, kind of what did the chapter do for you?
Well, I think the primary myth he points out and that he really exposes here is that the phone tells us that we are the center of the universe. The way that we use these things, the way the apps are designed, all of that stuff is working to make us feel as if we're the center of the universe. And then as he kind of works his way through the chapter, and as you think through the implications of the gospel, just in your mind, you start to realize, hey, that's kind of antithetical to the Christian life, where we're supposed to be, we're not supposed to be the center of things. God is supposed to be first, other people are supposed to be second, and we're supposed to be, you know, last down there at the bottom, trying to be servants of everybody ahead of us. But when we are made to feel like we're the center of the universe, that kind of flips that hierarchy on its head. So, I mean, for me, that's what I always think about with technology. You know, in this chapter, it's really talking about phones specifically. But if we're not careful, we let ourselves become the center of our universe, the center of our own thoughts. And that will start to erode our spirituality as Christians really, really quickly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think like for me, just in reading this chapter, it was really good because it forced me to look in the mirror about my use of my smartphone, how I track media with it, how I track the world, with it, you know, how often do I have it out? All those things were just really, brought to the forefront in reading this chapter. And so it was good just to kind of sit under the examination table, if I can use that metaphor, and let Trevin kind of pick at my usage of my phone. And I found, as I read this chapter, I found some areas where I was like, I need to think about this differently. And I need to maybe alter some of my access and my behavior with my phone, just so I can be more present in the world that I'm in, and be a better steward of the limitations that God has given me in that. So I think it's,
absolutely. I mean, that I think on page 19, he says, in the 21st century, we keep our friends close and our phones closer. Yeah. And I remember reading that, looking down on the couch, and I was like, yep, it's staring right at me.
Were you reading it on a phone? I'm curious.
No, but no. I was reading it. I have the actual book, but I looked next to me and my phone's right there, you know, just waiting to interrupt me.
Well, I was thinking about, like, how many times do I go to a gathering with some other people, a party, or, you know, even dinner time, and we're sitting there around the table and we're talking, and, you know, somebody says something like, you know, it's a random fact, you know, kind of comes out. I'm a sports guy, so it's often like, oh, do you remember in 2012 when so-and-so threw 500 touchdowns? They're like, well, I don't think it was that many. And what was the first response? We like pull out our phone and fact check ourselves.
Oh yeah. Real time.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, I think that's so right. We keep our friends close and our phones closer. You go to a restaurant and you see a couple that's on a date and, I don't even know if they're talking to each other. Like there's just this imminent light flowing up into their face from their phones. Like, and that's where the myth really hits home, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, he kind of lays out at the beginning of the chapter, he lays out what I thought was really, for us reading this book and for our readers that are going along with us, the most important question I think is on page 19, where he says, the question for Christians is does my phone help or hinder my walk with Christ? And so that's kind of what you were saying. And it made you really, examine your own life and your own practices with your phone or other pieces of technology. And I mean, I think that's really what, how we can encourage maybe some people as we talk through this is, we can point out a couple of things he mentioned here in the chapter, but maybe just give some practical insights into our own lives or things we've read that maybe show us a way forward, because it is easy to be negative all the way about technology. It's also easy to just be kind of blindly accepting of it. And I feel like as Christ followers, we should be somewhere more in the middle where we are a little skeptical of these things because, as we'll see, they come with their own value system that might not be the same one that Jesus would have us follow. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that there aren't some redeeming qualities to them, right? The internet, the iPhone, like these things were not invented outside of the sovereignty of God. Like they're not a surprise to him. He knew they were going to be created. So there is some way in which they can play a part in his story. And so I think our role as Christ followers is to think through, how in my own life can I use these things to best steward my time, my relationship and with God, and then to help push the mission of God forward.
Yeah, and that's right on there. I think we've got to get to the gospel with our phones so that we can serve one another well, so that we can remember and grow in Christ and not, I think that you're right. That's absolutely the question is, do our phones help or hinder our walk with Christ? Maybe it'd be good here just to kind of at least highlight the two myths that that Trevin points out about what our phones are doing within us. So he states that the first myth is that you're the center, our phones tell us that you're the center of the universe. They really put us, so the selfie, the Snapchat, the Instagram, the Twitter, I mean, it's just really like, how do we parade ourselves through our phones is so much of it. Or you know, we can take it to our smart devices as well. And then the other way that it goes back is like, we tell ourselves a myth, or we tell our phones a myth in that we say to them, everything of our, like we put our lives on the internet. We put ourselves at the center of the world through our phones, and knowledge becomes something super important. And those are really destructive myths for us.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, when we make ourselves the center of the universe, we've already talked about how that's kind of antithetical to the Christian life. But he points out, he says on page 20, that nothing makes us feel more in control, more godlike, more knowledgeable, more connected than feeling like that, than feeling like we are the center of the universe. And then you add to that what you were pointing out about knowledge. We love having, like you were saying, that example. Like if you're talking to some guys, you look up the sports stat, like right there. We love having access to that infinite amount of knowledge because we feel like it makes us more powerful because we have knowledge about something. And he did a good job of pointing out that knowledge, we often confuse knowledge about with knowledge of. It's one of the most common mistakes we make in a connected world. And he was talking about that on page 21. And that's so true. I mean, we may have knowledge about God even, but if we don't have knowledge of God, then we don't really have a relationship there. Those are two different kinds of knowledge.
Is there any, I know you're on social media, as am I, is there anybody that you follow, maybe that would be in the kind of a, I don't know, celebrity category that you feel like, you know them through, social media or that sort of experience? And how do you contrast that with knowing about them?
Yeah, no, I mean, most of the people that I follow on Twitter, I've never met in person and probably never will. Like the people that I hang out with, I don't even think they are on Twitter. They don't tweet, so I don't even follow them. So yeah, it's I've actually heard this an interesting analogy. You're talking about sports. You know, a lot of people know like Steph Curry is real big in the NBA right now. So there's a ton of people that know all of his his 3-point percentage, all these stats about his shooting and everything like that. It's like, okay, that's awesome. You know a lot about Steph. If you were to walk up to Steph Curry's door, you know, knock on it, he opens the door. Does he know you? It's not the same thing. It's like he doesn't know who you are, even though you know a lot about him. And that's, you know, we can confuse knowledge about people or knowledge about sports or God, like we've been talking about, and think that we actually know something really about them when in fact we don't. And the more dangerous side for doing this online is that, as he points out throughout the throughout this, we're curating the image that we are putting out there. So what you see is not actually that person anyways. It's what they've chosen to share with the world that they're comfortable with.
Right. And that, yeah, that's really where it hits the road in a lot of ways in terms of us telling, not just telling our phones a lie, but really telling the world a lie. We position and posture ourselves to the world in the best light we can. So like how often do we put our failures up on Facebook or on Twitter? How often do we demonstrate like I blew it here? I don't think we ever do, right? Most of the time it's no. Like,
yeah, I have three kids that are 5, 3, and 1. And so, the times where everybody's screaming in the kitchen and me and their mom both lose it, like that's not on my Instagram story, you know?
What?
Like, I'm not sharing that with people.
Yeah. No, nor am I. But again, it goes back to that idea of the curating our own conscience and putting ourselves out there. I was really, in reading this chapter, something really I wouldn't say connected. It caught me. And I actually, as I was reading, I stopped and looked at my wife and I said, does this really happen? I was floored in the way that he was talking about these interviews with these teenage girls and how as they post something on Instagram or Snapchat, they are consciously watching and waiting. And this might be a generational thing. I don't know. But they are checking the stats, as it were, immediately. And it was like their heart rose when they were, you know, when their picture was liked and loved, and they crashed if it wasn't even the right people that didn't like that. And I mean, I was kind of floored by that, that's what goes on. And then I started to think about, well, I kind of do that too. When I tweet something that I think is clever and I want to see it, you know, who retweets this, who likes it, or, you know, who loves it. I mean, that's just, wow. How insidious is that? How much like a drug is that to our minds and to our hearts, about our value?
And that's exactly how it works. And if it goes back to, you know, the creation account, we're made in the image of God and we were made to know him in the most intimate way that we can, like actually being with him right there in the garden, right in the very beginning. Of course, that's through the fall. Everything is separated now, but thankfully, through the blood of Christ, we can now come back into that relationship. What comes with that being created to be known like that? Trevin talks about this on page 30. He says we want to be affirmed and accepted by others. We want to be seen, and we want to know we're not invisible, and to know that we matter. Like that's at the core of all of our beings. That longing is there. And it can be destructive to look for that in the wrong places, of course.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this just the other day. I was on a run. I run in the mornings at like the same time about 5 days a week. And a bunch of other people, like, you know, they're on the same schedule. So I'll pass the same people almost every day when I'm out on a run. And one day I was walking because I was just kind of burned out. My legs were just tired. And so I was just walking the same route I normally go. And one lady passed me on the way back, and she must turn around, I guess, past where I go. But as she was coming back the other way, she takes off her earbuds, you know, because everybody's, of course, listening to their phone as we're talking about. She takes off her earbuds and she says, "Hey, are you okay? Are you injured? You're walking. You're normally out running." And I was like, "Oh, wow. Thanks for caring. I don't even really know you. That's great. That's awesome that you stopped." And, you know, we just had a tiny exchange. Like, "No, I'm all good. I just try and walk every now and then when my legs are tired." And, after that, I was like, man, that someone that I didn't even know, you know, they took notice of me. I felt affirmed. They feel, the same things that we kind of go to social media looking for, to be seen, to be heard, to be noticed. It was just such a powerful thing. And I was like, after that happened, I read this chapter and I was like, oh man, that's really what he's talking about. There is that longing that's inside of us just to be seen.
Do you think that in all of this, that our phones are really creating, I wouldn't say creating, let me rephrase that. Do you believe our phones are, in essence, trying to fill the void of God in our lives?
Maybe in some ways. I think that instead of that, what may be happening is that they make us feel like God.
Hmm.
Because they make us feel like we have infinite knowledge. We're always connected. I mean, you know, if you ask most people these days, like, what one thing could you not live without? It's their phone. I mean, there's research that backs that up. It's changed over time, you know, like it used to be for teens that they're getting a car was their symbol of freedom, right? It was that, okay, now I'm on my own. I can go off. I can do my own thing. But now there's been a bunch of research lately about how teens that actually are not, they're just not getting their driver's licenses in the same numbers.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of theories as to why, but one of them is that they were handed their portal of freedom when they were 12 or whenever they got their first iPhone, you know?
No, I definitely see that even at my own church that, you know, there's a decrease in the number of, like, it's no longer cool among the teens to say like, "Ooh, I'm 16. I got my driver's license." It's like they show up with their smartphone and, "Yeah, look at me. I got this." And like, "Oh, great. Here you go. You know, you're into that world." I don't know if I could feel like I could safely walk away for forever without a smartphone. It's become that connected. I'll speak to that in just a moment. We'll talk about that in just a moment in terms of practical applications. Mm-hmm. How does the gospel then, and I think this is a good place where Trevin talks about this, but how does the gospel tell us a better story about our phones and about really not just so much about our phones, but about us and who we are?
Yeah, well, I mean, the gospel tells us that God knows us. He knows the real us, you know, that not the curated version of ourselves. He knows everything that's going on, not only in through our actions, but of course in our hearts and in our minds. And even though he knows those things, he still not only loves us, he likes us as well. And he, even in the midst of knowing all of the ugliness that comes through our sin and just the mess of all of our lives, he still sent Jesus to die for us, regardless of that, and regardless of the fact that we were rebelling against him, right? So the gospel tells us that God knows us, the real us, and that he still loves us, and that he also, he knows us and wants to be known by us. You know, of course he loves us, but he wants it to be reciprocal. He wants us to want to long for that, he wants us to long for that relationship with him, and the gospel makes both of those things possible.
In so much a deeper way than just the superficial Snapchat or tweet or email or any of that, that there's a real relationship there with the creator of all things, the one who's infinite in his knowledge. There's a real relationship with him through Christ that satisfies the deepest longings of our heart, more so than any kind of experience or engagement in a digital world could be through a small, you know, 5-inch screen.
Yeah, and I mean, you're a pastor. This is one of the One of the toughest things that's got to be reckoned with in the near future, where we've got, as people get more and more used to digital relationships, we've, as the church, we're commanded and called to continue to gather together, to meet together, and not to forsake doing that. And, you know, as you can, anybody that wakes up in any of our churches today can, they can podcast one of the best teachers in the world just anytime they want to. They can probably watch their service on a live stream. They can do all sorts of different, they have all kinds of options. And so, like, what is it that we, how do we compel people to come in? How do we teach them that it's like, hey, the gospel tells us a better story, and that better story involves face-to-face interaction with people, like in the flesh. And there's a lot of theology being worked out around that right now. I know that, you know, Tony Ranke book, like 12 Ways Your Phone Is Changing You, that's kind of a primer into that world. But I've heard that Andy Crouch, I've heard him say that he's working on a kind of a theology of technology book, and Tony Ranke's actually working on a fuller version of that as well. And Trevin has done a really good job here with kind of introing into some of those areas. One of those is the importance of face-to-face communication. Yeah. I mean, so many people are just apt to want to communicate by text, you know, instead of calling. We'd rather email than meet in person. We'd rather do anything that has less kind of relational friction because it's easier, mm-hmm. quite frankly. But that doesn't mean that it's better, and that we as the church and disciple makers have to figure out how do we explain that it is better? How do we explain that we were made for this? I think I mentioned to you, Jeremy, before we started recording that I've written a paper about this that I turned in at the end of my seminary that this past summer. And so I've read a lot about this topic. And one of the things that came up in that, you know, obviously the Bible doesn't talk about the iPhone or social media. That's not in there. But one of the things it does address is face-to-face communication. There's a couple of interesting places in the New Testament where I think you see both Peter and John, the apostles, work out how are they going to decide between when is it the right time to write a letter or when is it the right time to talk to someone face-to-face. And so I know that, you know, letter writing is not a technology to us anymore, but in that day it was new and cutting edge, and that was how people were communicating. That was their kind of two options. So you see them work out in different ways. Okay, I felt like maybe it was best at this time, Paul says, to tell you this. This is one of the Thessalonian letters. I felt it better to write this to you, kind of, you know, give you the heavy, hard-hitting yeah. stuff now, and then I'll come in on the back end and I'll help kind of clean this up relationally. But then you see John in another circumstance say, man, I long to be with you, and there's so much more I want to talk to you about, but I'm just going to wait until I get there in person. And so that's the kind of thing where we're going to work out, okay, when is it the right time for me to do a Google Hangout with some people? But when is it the right time to, like, actually get them in the same room and work through something?
Yeah, very much so. I think there's a little bit of a, I don't know if we've hit the highest peak in terms of our digital consuming. In terms of taking in our cell phones and that sort of thing. I don't think we've hit the peak as a society there yet, but I do sense that there is a turn to where people are actually saying, I would rather be in an environment where I sit down and I have a cup of coffee and I'm talking with you face to face across the table. And there's the, you know, I think Chick-fil-A is one of these places where if you go in and you, they've got a little box or something like that. If you drop in your cell phone in that and you eat your whole meal without, you know, with your cell phone in that box, you can come at the end and get a free ice cream or something. I've heard this about that restaurant in some places. But I think there's going to be a cultural reversion in some way back to where we've got to be people locally, face-to-face, interacting with one another and crafting that value. And I think that's one of the distinct marks of the local church gathered. I can watch a sermon online. I can, you know, go through a worship experience and see a service and that sort of thing right from the internet in the comfort of my own home without anybody else around. but it misses something. And that's that corporate dynamic together, that sharing of life, that seeing and being. It's not just me watching a screen, but it's me together with other people praising God and lifting him up in real time, in a physical location, with that express purpose and that express intent. And I think that's where, I hope where our culture kind of begins to revert back to some of that as well. But I think it's going to take us showing the gospel is a better way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the, we were just talking about really kind of relational stuff, meeting together, but probably even more dangerous, honestly, is how distracting our phone and everything else can be to like our personal spiritual formation. You know, the number of people that read a book, even just like one book per year, is like, it's just plummeting. It has been for a while, as far as I understand it. And I mean, as you talk to people in the church these days, it's regular Bible reading and prayer. These things are just, they're such a struggle in their life, because from the moment they wake up, they're constantly being distracted away from the more important thing by these things that are literally designed to get our attention.
Yeah. And not just designed to get our attention, but designed to sell us this or that. You know, every, Trevin points that out, like every notification we get these days are an appeal to our wallet. You know, buy this, have this experience, add on this, you know, get this or that. And that's just so insidious against our hearts. You know, I was thinking, as you mentioned that, one of the values, people might ask, why are the articles on Gospel-Centered Discipleship's site so long? We prefer and practice a long form article format for our writing. And the reason is because we want to help people cultivate a process of thinking that's more than 500 words. That's more than just a quick hit blog that's just everybody loves, but it's more than a listicle. It's actually, I've got to think about and meditate on this piece and this article a little bit more so than I would something else. And that really, scientists have shown that's really formative in the brain. We're actually rewiring our brains differently when we take in the short versus we take in the long. And we've got to do that. We've got to cultivate that. So that's one reason, like, GCD is long form in our articles on the site.
Yeah, well, I mean, the great call, you know, in the Psalms, be still and know that I am God. And so the know that I am God is preceded by the being still enough to hear from him and to just get ourselves into that space.
Yeah, be still until I get a notification on my phone.
Exactly.
No, maybe not. Maybe not. Well,
I just like to point this out for people, because if they've never heard about it, sometimes you think like, oh, Twitter is just whatever. It's just, you know, maybe I use it too much, or maybe I'm fine on it. And we can think that they're totally neutral. But if you start looking into it, I mean, I've heard interviews with a guy named Tristan Harris, who used to be this something called the design ethicist at Google. And he has an insider look on how all of these companies work, like Twitter and Facebook and Google and all of this. These companies now literally have what they call attention engineers that are, you know, there's thousands of them that are literally working to get and keep your attention. Wow. And so when you talk about those kind of scary examples from the book, this chapter with like the teenage girls, and you started to wonder like, hey, do I actually do that? Well, I'm sure that the answer is yes in some way, because that's they're playing against our biology and our physiology, how we're made up, in order to actually distract us. Like this, some of these people that came out of, or some of these people that are doing this now, they came out of the casino industry, where their job was to literally to try and figure out how to get your attention and keep you in front of this thing, and they do that by working through the power of persuasion. So I heard that Tristan Harris guy say in an interview something about Twitter, and I can't not see it every time I go to it now. If you notice, like when you pull up your app or you go to the website, the site loads up and your timeline shows up, but then there's another, like, I don't know, 3/4 of a second. It's a small time, but just long enough before your notifications, like indicator, your number, you know, on the notifications thing, there's a little delay there. And the reason that delay is there is not because they can't program it fast enough. It's Twitter. They have plenty of money to do that if they wanted to. It's because they're playing off of that, our physiology, where they know, hey, if if there's this little delay, it'll keep their attention longer in that, what's the right word? You know, you get excited when you see it.
Yeah. The, our brain just goes, oh yeah, that little adrenaline kick almost. And just, clicks in there. I know that. And now that you've explained that, man, I see that all the time. Wow. So let's talk a little bit here. Just kind of, we didn't talk so much about the way Trevin talks about confirmation bias in the chapter, or being kind of in the echo chamber of hearing all the things that you would that would agree with you. And I think that was really a good point. And I'll just kind of mark that, so as you read the chapter, you can think about that. But having voices in that are from a different perspective or from a different group or tribe than you are, just to allow you to hear and see things maybe from a fuller perspective. I think that was really important. But the thing I want to come back to kind of as we get ready to land this this conversation is kind of the application of, like, what are some practical ways that we can live out and really engage well our phones, and what are some practical applications, not just on the negative side of, like, don't do this, but where does the smartphone have anything good for us in terms of, like, can it help us get closer to Christ in some way? So do you have any practical suggestions, Grayson, about how to use your phone, good and bad?
Yeah, well, let's start with, like, controlling the negative aspects of it first. You know, some of the things that that Trevin points out, he says that if we want to counteract the myths from the phone by creating, we want to do that by creating time and space to experience real life. And we want to do that, you know, in an experience that's not mediated by a screen. And a couple of things he says to do here are to carve out daily, weekly, and monthly times to just be away from your phone. You know, like, if you're going on a walk with the family, turn it off, leave it in the drawer, do something like that so that you're completely away from it. But to find a time daily, whether that's dinner time, maybe the time you're putting the kids down for bed, whatever that is, find a time where you can get out of reach of your phone so that you don't have that impulse to check it. He said to do the same thing weekly, and he doesn't go into this, but the kind of natural progression here for a Christ follower would be like, hey, your Sabbath day, whatever that day of rest is for you, consider just leaving the thing in a drawer. Maybe you don't watch 4 hours of Netflix that night. Like, try and do something that's not mediated by a screen so that you can connect to the people around you, and more importantly, connect to God. And then he says to do that monthly, of course, and I'm not sure, I can't remember if he gave some examples there, but I mean, if you do a monthly date night with the spouse, or if you do something like that, this would be a great time to just kind of leave that thing at home or turn it off altogether.
That's one of the things when I go out with my wife Stephanie on a date, and I had to learn this. This didn't come natural, but one of the things I just decided early on when we would go out on a date is I actually give her my phone and just hand it to her. Just to say to her and communicate to her, like, I am fully present with you tonight. And, like, so our conversation, like, I'm not going to pick this thing up and look at it because you have it. But it's just been, I think it demonstrated to her a deep sense of value for her. And that, you know, all this other stuff can go on in the world and I can miss it all. And that's okay because I'm with you.
Yeah, and that's, you know, his second suggestion was really to carve out space in your home and life to be away from your phone. And that's what you've done there. We've done some of the same things in our home. I mean, we have a cabinet where our phones, if I'm at home or my wife's at home, our phones stay there. All the notifications are turned off of them. The only thing that's coming through is going to be a phone call. And it's loud enough on the ringer that we'll hear it if we're, you know, downstairs. But we've done that because we just started to notice that we have a 5 and a 3 and a 1-year-old. My 5-year-old is not really... he's just not really influenced by technology stuff that much. He doesn't really care that much about it at this point. But my 3-year-old is enthralled by it. And we found that she was just, she was picking up anything that she could find around the house, pretending it was a phone. And even though it wasn't real, she would be ignoring the people right next to her as she fake swiped through this thing. And that was like, she started doing that at like age 2. And so we were like, okay, this is not okay. You know, this thing isn't even real, and you're already seeing the negative effects of you ignoring your brother who is trying to get you to play Legos with him or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And we're like, we've got to stop this. So I was like, she's doing it. I mean, she sees other kids, I guess, but mostly she sees us, and
yeah,
we have them.
that's
So
good.
we've got to put them away. And so we've just really started that practice where we're like, if we're home, man, it just goes in that cabinet.
Yeah, that's
And
great.
anytime we need to kind of be on it, we go over there. We'll, respond to a text message standing there. And then when we're done, it just goes straight back in that cabinet.
I think one of the best features of, at least of the iPhone, I'm not sure about Droid devices or Google phones or any of that, but one of the best features, I think that's probably the most unused feature, is the do not disturb thing. Just to be able
Oh,
to
yeah.
flip up and say, right now I'm not going to get any notifications. If it's a phone situation, like the phone, if you call it twice, it'll interrupt and do that. But everything just kind of goes to voicemail or any of that. And I think, and I forget where I saw it the other day. I'll have to look and find. There was an incredible article about just turning off all the notifications on your phone. Just don't get them. And that will change even the way that you interact with your phone. I was like, that's brilliant. Just to not have that constant buzzing, constant ringing, constant attention grab away from what you're doing or where you're at, so that you can focus really on that and on who you're with and what you're seeking to do. I think that's super good, super good. What about to the positive side of it? Like, how can we use our smartphones and our devices for growing in Christ and use it well in terms of the kingdom? What's some positive application here?
Yeah, well, I mean, kind of on the higher level, anytime I can find a way to use technology that serves people that I work with in the flesh, like at the church or that I'm in ministry with, I always love to use it those ways. So like we're recording a podcast here. I also record a podcast for an audience of like 62 people, right? I'm just my group leaders at the church. I oversee our small group ministry there. And so I knew that they wanted to have more kind of practical training and equipping stuff. And we're just not able to do that often. We already have quarterly trainings with them all. But one of the ways I was like, hey, I could record something where I start to answer all the questions that I get from them over the weeks and months, and that can serve them. And so I've started to do that over the last 2 or 3 months. And as far as I can tell, they really enjoy it. It really serves them. I'm actually answering questions that they have, or going, teaching through parts of the Bible that I feel like God wants us to know more about as leaders. And so anytime you can find ways that technology will enhance like an in-the-flesh relationship, I think that's a good use for it. We were under a tornado warning here about a week ago, and we almost never, you just heard me talk about the phones, we never pull these things out. But there was going to be a tornado coming in, and was telling my 5 and 3 and 1 year old, of course they have no idea what that means. We live in North Carolina, so there's not a whole lot of tornadoes. And I was trying to explain it, and I was like, you know what, let me show you like a 10 seconds on YouTube of what this thing looks like so that you know. But that enhanced our conversation at that point. And it was, here's what it looks like. Okay, boom, goes back in the cabinet. But now we have, that's something you couldn't have done 20 years ago that I think does enhance that conversation in the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Grayson, we've talked quite a bit about the chapter here, and I think it's been a great discussion and good conversation here with you today, and really have enjoyed thinking through this some more. And I hope that our listeners will take some time and kind of evaluate their own engagement with their smartphones. I hope that this book has been helpful in kind of pointing those things out and letting us see the mirror of our own lives well, so that we would be people that use and allow our phones to help us grow in our walk with Christ rather than hindering that. And it's been a great discussion today. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, same here, man.
Yeah. One of the things we do want to mention to our listeners and to those who are part of our book club who are reading along with us through this book is we want to hear from you. We want to know what questions you have. We would love to be able to dialogue even about those things as we record these each week. So feel free to send us a note either through the Facebook group or on the Patreon page. I believe our comments are enabled at each posting there. So if you have comments through the Patreon page or through the Facebook group, we'd love to hear those so that we can dialogue with you on that way. We don't want this just to be a siloed conversation just between Grayson and myself, but we'd love to interact with you. We're going to have Trevin himself on the podcast here in a couple of weeks as well, so we'll be able to ask him some of your questions and be able to dialogue with him a little bit about these things, and I'm looking forward to that as well. But We want you to be involved and engaged with us in this. So if you have questions, if there's things that stand out to you in reading the chapter this week, feel free to note those and stir up discussion with others on the group. And we would love that interactive and that engagement piece as part of the reading the book and the book club this fall. So Grayson, anything to cap off here with or to add just as we close today?
I think maybe just if this chapter does anything for you, I would hope that it would encourage our readers to just reflect on their own use of their technology, that maybe their phone in particular, and just ask themselves to look at it differently. And instead of something maybe that's just for distraction or information, start to look at it as a tool that can really help to aid you in making disciples. And then think through, what does it take? What kind of discipline is it going to take to make that shift? Because as we've talked about, things are designed to do the opposite. They're designed to distract you. But that doesn't mean that we can't, through things like turning off notifications, like you mentioned, there are other ways that we can turn this thing more into a tool that we can use for the kingdom.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Feel free to, on our website at gcdiscipleship.com, search for articles related to our phones, to devices, and that sort of thing. I know we have several, even Tony Reinke's, an excerpt from his book, 12 Ways a Phone is Changing You. That's posted on there. Trevin has an article up about that. There's some other good engagement there as well if you're looking for some more resources on this particular topic. But Grayson, thank you so much for your time today. It's good again to converse with you about this chapter. And we look forward to continuing through This Is Our Time with Trevin Wax again next week. So for myself and for Grayson, thank you so much for listening to the GCD Book Club conversation. And we hope that you have a great week. Thank you.